out skiing with some friends, and we've done that a number of times over the years, not so much lately, but over the years we've done that, and I was trying to think which occasion it was, and we couldn't sort of pin it down. I said, was it when we were there? And she said, no, it was 30 years ago, like that was too long ago. And so I'm trying to pin it down, but I just remember probably for 23 years now I've been the senior pastor of the church here. Malcolm and Jill, who we loved so much, were with us for many years, and they went to plant the church in Orange, and then I stepped in as the senior pastor here of the church. 23 years you've had to put up with me, and thank you for doing that. But it's sometime soon after that, I remember just being prayerful about just wanting to be able to sum up in a sentence. You know, that's what a mission statement is. It's not so much, well, this is what we, some grand statement that we're going to now try and live up to. But I think what it should do is it should reflect what are the things that we value. What is the thing that reflects who we are, but it's something that we value and don't want to lose? You know what I mean? So it's something we want to remind ourselves of into the future. So no matter, you know, if I move on or if other generations come in, then it's something that we've said is it reflects who we are, but it also reflects something that is valuable to us. And I just remember I was thinking that through and had lots of thoughts, and just the thought came to me, the sentence came to me, facilitating God's purpose in every life. And we would have come back and shared it with others, and it wasn't just a thing that that I was, adopting from my own self, but it was something we would have shared with the team, and we would have taken that on. And what I like about that is that so often when you start thinking about a mission statement for a church or any organisation, you can think, well, this is what we're going to do, and now who can we get to sign up to help us to do what we're going to do? And this turns it around. This is what I like about it. It turns it around. Because what it says is, it says that the actual role or the motivation or the focus or the heart of the leadership, the pastoral leadership and the leadership of the church and the focus of the church is not so much, well, this is our goal, can you all help us? But the goal is, hello mate, how are you? But the goal is that we actually commit ourselves to facilitating God's purpose in the life of the people that God entrusts into our world. Can you see how that's the opposite? It's not like, who can I sign up to be helpful to my vision and my goal? It's actually, you know what, my vision and my goal becomes, how can I encourage what God is doing in your life? Now, that doesn't mean that Cindy comes and says, I've got this grand idea, and so now I've got to try and make that happen. But we journey together. We say, well, actually, is that a God thing? Okay, if it is, then what growth needs to happen in your life? And what can we do to see that happen? So it's not like everything, every whim of a person becomes automatic. But what it does do is it says, well, you know, I'm not just looking at how can Cindy benefit me with her gifts and talents, but I'm looking to say, what is God doing in Cindy's life? What is God saying to her? What's stirring in her heart that I can get alongside her, and, you know, in an honest relationship, I can encourage her in maybe areas where she might need to grow if she wants to see that come to pass. I'm picking on Cindy because she's very forgiving. Is that right? And so, how are you going so far? Are you okay, Cindy? All right so far? So then, but you know what happens? It's not like, well, whatever she wants to do, then I'm committed to that. But it's, what is God saying to her? How can we work through that? How can we process that? Now, I'm not sure how well we do that. Maybe you think we don't do that well. I don't know. But as I think about that and as I use that as a checking point, even for my own leadership and ministry, and even as I talk with our different leaders at different times, I'm saying to them, this is what we want to do. We want to say, how can we facilitate God's purpose in the life of those who are entrusted to us? So if I'm like Christine and I'm running the children's ministry, then what am I thinking? I'm thinking how can I identify and begin to recognize what God is doing in those children? What is God shaping in those children's lives? How can I then water that? How can I nurture that? How can I bring that out? You get what I mean? It's not like, how can I get those kids to align with my, you know, with everything I believe and I agree. But it's really, how can I look at what God's doing in the life of those children, each one of them as an individual, and say to myself, how can I facilitate that? Now, that's a big thing, isn't it? Like, it's not easy always. And I don't, again, I'm not saying that we always get that right, but I'd hope that you feel that there's a little bit of that as I say that to you. You can see a little bit of that reflected in the way that we lead and the way that we do ministry in this place. That we look and say, what is God stirring in you? And if someone, Rachel Gilmore would be a good example. And I don't know whether Rach would get to see this today. Sometimes she joins us for our service and sometimes she gets to watch it later. But, you know, Rach came to us at some stage and she would have said, I've got a real heart for China. She was involved in a church in Sydney and had a heart for China and so the work there. And so when she came back to town, she says, I've got a real heart for China. Now, you know, part of me says, well, no, we support Sri Lanka and Serbia and, you know, we're already pretty committed and stretched. But instead we just say, well, share with us. What do you think? How does that look for you? What makes you feel like that's the thing? You know, is there another place? Is it just that you've got a passion for missions? And as you work through that, you find, no, she's just got a passion for China. And she's going to give herself to whatever it takes to be able to develop the gifts she needs. I mean, amazingly, she learnt the language in such an incredible way that people over there are amazed at how well she can actually speak the language. She's an incredibly committed person to being able to do the ministry that God's called to her. So what do we say? We say, well, no, that doesn't fit us. No, we say, well, hang on, it looks like that is really something that God is doing in your life and God wants to do in you. So how can we facilitate that? So now many of you support her. Together as a church, we underwrite $500 a month, I think it is, to, now we don't give all of that. We just say if that ever stopped, we would keep that going so you're not over there stranded. But people individually give pretty well all of that. We contribute very little of it in the end because people give that, but we underwrite that. So $500 a month from this church family goes to support her as well as others, her immediate family and others support her. But see, that's because what is our responsibility in her life is to say, not what, how can she help us? She's a gifted girl. How can she help us? Well, where are we doing missions? She better get online and come and do what we're wanting to do. And we say, well, Lord, what are you doing in her life? How can we facilitate that? Does that all make sense? And I'm open to your feedback at some point if you think we don't do that well or if you think we can do it better. But I'm just putting it out there and saying that's something that's important to us, is that we're not just looking to try and sign people up for our vision, but we're actually looking to say, what is God doing in the people that have been entrusted into our circle and our care? Now, even when I say that, like, I don't mean just the church family. I mean, if I look at someone who's in my workplace, well, my workplace is the church family mostly, isn't it? But, you know, if I was working at the council as I was at one stage, you know, I'd be thinking, Lord, what do you want me to do to the people that you've entrusted into my circle here that I can facilitate your purpose in their life? And obviously, if they don't know the Lord, well, a good starting point, isn't it, at some point to be able to share the gospel with them and let them know that, you know, that there's an opportunity for them to have a relationship with the living God. But it's also just seeing what is it that maybe God's plan and God's purpose and timing and agenda in their life. Everywhere I go, I'm saying, Lord, what do you want me to do? Why did you put me here? Why did you put me in this group? Who is it that you want me to encounter or to have a divine appointment with in a way that I can facilitate your purpose in their life in some way? If you nod and say you've got me, I can move on to the next point. How's that? All right, a few nods, so let's make it. Let's move on. A verse that came to me that really relates to this, I was sharing with a group of leaders not too long ago, and as I was preparing for that, I felt this verse was a verse for them. But as I was thinking about today, I thought, actually, it's a verse for us too. And it's one that I can still remember, you know, when it really resonated in my life many years ago, and I've held on to it as one of my life scriptures. I share a few of those from time to time. But this one is one of my life scriptures, one that I hold to and check with regularly. 1 Corinthians 10:24, and it says this, let no man seek his own, but every man another's well-being. Now, I like the old translation because the old authorized version, when I first learned it, said, let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth. And I like that idea, like seek everybody else's wealth, chase everyone else's wealth. But no, what it means is everybody's well-being. Let no man seek his own, but every, what does it say? Let no man seek his own, but every man another's well-being. And I love that as a life scripture, as a principle. And that fits the facilitating God's purpose in every life, doesn't it? Before that, it's talking about, in the context, it's talking before that, it says, hey, everything might be lawful, but everything's not expedient. In other words, you know, you can do whatever you like. You're free to do certain things that may seem lawful or may be lawful, but in the end, what happens is what makes them lawful or not. Like, some things are not lawful because they're just totally contrary to biblical truth and principle. Isn't that right? But some things, they're not wrong in themselves. They're not against the Bible, but what they are is we have to measure them up against, is this going to be for someone's well-being? So some things I take on myself to hold back on when I could claim my rights and I could claim my entitlement, but I hold back on them because what I'm seeking is not my own, but another's well-being. So in the context of, well, everything is lawful, everything is, you know, you can do whatever you like, but everything is not expedient, everything is not beneficial. And therefore, what you need to do is you need to seek not your own, well, what are my rights, what am I allowed to do? But it's really, you know what, what's going to be beneficial? What's going to bless the person around me? What is going to actually enrich their well-being? Well, you know what, then I'm willing to even take on greater challenge, if you like, within my life to not just do what I think I'm allowed to do, what I have the right to do, what's biblical to do, but actually what is going to be a benefit to the person around me? What is going to be a blessing to them? Now, again, I always have to bring this in and say, that doesn't mean that, well, I just let someone around me do whatever they want. Like our children, we love our children, that's why we discipline them. Is that right? We love our children, that's why we set boundaries for them. So it doesn't mean that everybody that comes up to me and, you know, wants to rip me off in some way, that I'm just going to be, oh, well, I just want to bless them. Because what their well-being is sometimes is to say no. What their well-being is sometimes is to be able to journey with them in learning the lessons that will help them to be a more disciplined person or a person of character and integrity, you know, who values the right things rather than actually help to make somebody a person who I wouldn't want them to be. Do you get what I mean? And so it's not always about just being a soft touch, but it is about asking yourself this question, filtering every action and every thought through, is this for the well-being of the person around me? I think you got that point. Facilitating God's purpose in every life. You know, let no man seek his own, but every man another's well-being. Just quickly, we have this booklet that's in some black folders at the back there that when we have someone visit the church for the first time, you know, they come to the church for the first time and they're interested in maybe knowing a bit more about the church, we give them the folder. Has some pamphlets in it, but it's got this one booklet in there that's got a little bit about, just in very... I guess we've shrunk it down to as few words as we can to say, you know, what really represents us well. And at the beginning, we've got this "we believe." We sang a song, "I believe," but we got this "we believe." We say who we are. Noranda CRC is a part of a growing network of CRC churches within this region. It is affiliated with CRC Churches International, a uniquely Australian movement established more than 60 years ago. We believe, and there's three things here, and I love them. Every time I read them, I think, I just love this. It says, relationship with God is available to all through faith in His Son, Jesus Christ. Every person is truly loved and valued by God. The second one is the Bible is true and relevant, the book of wisdom from God from God to help make life work. And the third thing is the power and the presence of the Holy Spirit can be experienced in each of our lives, bringing inner strength, guidance, and peace. I love that. And I think that's a bit of a quick summary of what we believe. But then we have our core values, and I just want to quickly refer to them this morning, and then we'll go into, we'll share communion together and go into our AGM time. But the four core values, we've drawn these from the biblical pictures or the biblical analogies of the church. They're analogies of the church that the Bible uses. There are others, but these are the four key ones. And the first one is the church is a bride. And we've said this, that the church is a bride. It speaks about our devotion to God. Every person is encouraged to live a fulfilled and fruitful life out of devotion to and friendship with a powerful but compassionate and loving God. You know, I've written down here in my notes Matthew 22:37-40, which just talks about this person was asking a question to trick Jesus in some way, you know, which is the greatest command, knew that whatever he answered was going to be a lose-lose situation for him. But Jesus, in his wisdom, he gave this answer and he said, this is it. In one place it says it's all summed up in this. But Jesus said this in Matthew 22. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. In one of the Gospels it says with all your strength. It adds that on. And then love your neighbor as yourself. And there is that... in one of the Gospels it says, and the second is like unto it, I think it's the Matthew one, the second is like unto it, love your neighbour as yourself. You know, that loving God is the first thing. And when we love God with all our heart, soul, mind and strength, everything else flows out of that. So today I'm just going to talk about the four core values, the church as a bride. But then there's the church as the body and the army and the family, which I'll just briefly comment on in a moment. But everything flows out of all our service. Everything flows out of, first of all, our devotion, or what I would call our intimacy with God. I was thinking this morning, I'd had this sort of thoughts prepared, but I was thinking this morning as I'm just brewing over, and I thought, what is it that encourages intimacy in any relationship? What is it that brings us closer in any relationship? And a few words came to me, and I'll just mention them. One is dependence and trust. Now, there's a sense of dependence in relationships that can be unhealthy, can't it? When I'm just totally dependent upon the other person and I don't engage in the relationship and fulfill my part of the relationship. But with God, and even in relationships, there's this sense of dependence that is healthy. Dependence and trust. You know, where we allow ourselves to actually need others. Where we allow ourselves to be quick to respond, to welcome others into our life when we need their input and their help. You know, we can be so shut off and so independent, but then we can be so dependent that we don't think and don't do anything, and then we kind of, in an unhealthy way, rely upon someone else. But in the middle, there's this sense of dependence that is a healthy dependence. And I think with our relationship with God, you know, faith without works is dead, James said. But, you know, it starts with depending on Him and being willing to call Him into our life quickly, being able to trust Him, even when it doesn't make sense to us or we don't understand fully, you know, what His way is. To know that His way is right and to trust His way. And so, dependence, understanding. I've come to really appreciate that word, to take a moment to understand. I did this course, and I think I've shared this a few times, but the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And one of the habits it says was, seek first to understand, then to be understood. And I can't tell you how many times I've stopped and I've thought, you know what, I kind of want to react to this situation, but I think I need to put this principle into play. I need to stop and try and understand what's happening in that other person's world. What's happening that's caused that person maybe to treat me like that, or to behave like that, or to do that action, or to say those words. Before I judge them, let me stop and think, what's happening in that person's life? And so there's this sense of understanding. In our relationship with God, it is to really, to not just look at the actions, but to know the heart of God. And I think it was said, I tried to find the verse quickly, but again, I was trying to keep this brief as well. But it said, was said of Moses, I think, wasn't it? Maybe in the Psalms, it was said of Moses. It says, you know, there are many who know the acts of God, but Moses knew the ways of God. Any of you theologians out there can confirm that that's what it says? Yeah. So Moses, it says, you know, there are plenty of people who know the acts of God, but Moses knew the way of God. And I think that's something that brings intimacy, is not just knowing the acts of God, but knowing the heart of God, knowing the way of God, and trusting the way of God. Priority time. You know, you can say what you like. I don't think you need to have bulk time always, you know, to build a relationship. Sometimes bulk time can actually work against a close and intimate relationship, you know. Absence makes the heart grow fonder, is it? And sometimes that is true if it's done in a healthy way. But, you know, it's not talking about ignoring or neglecting priority time if you want to build a relationship. You have to have that. And so I think particularly in relation to our intimacy with God, we've got to make priority time. It's not even just about time. It's not about spare time, but it is about priority time. And I think that will build intimacy in our relationship, in any relationship, but in our relationship with God. The other one I've got here is shared goals. My mind went to Jeremiah 29, which many of you would know, 29:11. Just says, you know, I know the plans that you have for me, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. And so there's this sense of knowing that God has plans for me, and being interested to share those plans and to understand those plans will bring intimacy with God. And the last one I've got here, which might seem interesting, but my mind could sort of bring the connection, was to imitate. You know, someone once said, the greatest compliment is to be imitated. You know, when your grandchildren or your children do something that you do, you always feel very flattered by that. You think, oh, that's nice, you know. They respect me in some way, they admire me in some way, that they want to do what I do. And there is an element of that, isn't there, in our life, those who we respect, we will imitate. Those who we hold up and give esteem to in our hearts and in our minds, we will actually imitate. Sometimes we can do that with people that maybe don't have the same values and wouldn't have values that ultimately we want to imitate. But if we take time and spend time, you know, admiring certain things, then what will happen inevitably is we will imitate those things. We have to, in some ways, be careful what we honor. We have to be careful what we imitate, what we hold up, because what will happen is we will ultimately imitate those qualities. But if we look at God and we look to see what are the qualities, what is beautiful about Him, then what will happen is we will find ourselves imitating, and when we do that, that will bring us into greater intimacy. In 1 Corinthians 11:1, Paul said, "Imitate me as I also imitate Christ." So he says, I'm imitating Christ, and as you imitate me, you can also imitate Christ. It's a really good verse. Alright, so the bride, the church of the bride. The church is a body. Simply, 1 Corinthians 12 talks about the different parts of the body. But I would just say this to you. This is about serving God together. This is about every believer having a ministry. This is about every believer being in full-time ministry. When you're on the work site, you know, you're in full-time ministry. When you're at school, you're in full-time ministry. When you're doing whatever you do in the family or wherever you find yourself, you're in full-time ministry. Because our life is ministry. Our life is serving God. And everything that we do is really something about doing ministry. But we do it together. Every person has a ministry and every person has a part. But we're not an island. We do that together. We serve together. The church is an army. You know, fulfilling God's mission. Matthew 28, go into all the world, preach the gospel, lay hands on the sick, cast out devils, teach to whatever I've commanded you, teach it to others, baptize in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. You know, these are the things that become a priority, not just for the pastor, not just for the church leaders, not just for the church, you know, on a Sunday, but really for each one of us on a Monday. You've often heard me say Jerry Cook, who I admired and looked up to and imitated sometimes, because I thought there were good aspects to his heart and the ministry that he had, and I wanted to have some of that rub off on me. And he talked about, I'm excited about the church on Sunday, but I'm really excited about the church on Monday. Because, you know, on Sunday, we come together. Ephesians 4 talks about the apostle, prophet, evangelist, pastor, teacher, and how what they do is, therefore, the equipping of the saints to do the work of ministry. Equipping the saints to do the work of ministry. Who is in ministry? All of us. As saints, we're in ministry. And so it's fulfilling God's mission. As an army, we're fulfilling His commission. We're going into all the world, evangelism and mission. But we do it as a body where every member has a part to play. And then the church is a family. So bride, body, army, family. Church is a family. You know, as far as scriptures, you could look up all the one another scriptures. You know, love one another, forgive one another, forbear one another. All the different one another scriptures, they really speak to family, don't they? And this is about our devotion to one another. A safe place for each of us to grow and to develop, with an emphasis on fellowship and discipleship. You know, when you look at each of one of these, in the bride, Jesus is the bridegroom. In the body, Jesus is the head. In the army, Jesus is the commander. In the family, well, God is the father. And Jesus is an heir, and we are joint heirs with Him. It's Christ-focused, isn't it? And it's Word-focused, and it's love-focused. You know, I'd love the team to come. We're just going to have communion together. If you guys would come and distribute the emblems to us, and the team would just come. We'll just sing a song. You know, I'm talking about what's important to us. You know, one of the things that's been important to us over the years is communion time. I've said to a few pastors at different times, a little bit in jest, but partly knowing it's probably true. I said, I think probably there might be a few things that would get me the sack as the pastor, but I said, I think one of them, maybe the main one, would be if I decided to have communion once a month instead of once a week. I think that would get me thrown out of the church as a pastor. Not thrown out, but, you know, it would get me certainly demoted in some way. Because it's been a value of ours. It's been something that's been important. And I value it too. I mean, it's not like it's the ritual of it, but it's actually, we need to keep that focus, don't we, on the cross and on what He has done for us. Alrighty, well, I really enjoyed sharing that. Sorry, it took a little longer than I'd hoped, but we'll be fairly brief with communion. We'll hand out the emblems, we'll sing a song, we'll partake together, and then we'll move into our AGM time, which shouldn't take too long.